بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. أهلا وسهلا ومرحبا بكم and welcome to the Medical Matters with myself, Brother Suleiman Isub, every Wednesday evenings between 8 and 9 p.m. Today being the 15th of Jumad al-Ula, 1447, corresponding to Wednesday, the 5th of November, 2025. Alhamdulillah, I would like to thank you, the listener of Markaz Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, and also not forgetting our esteemed doctor who always gives out his time for us. And today, you know, we've done with the other programs, or the different, last week we did the brain and the nervous system. And today, inshallah, we're going to be discussing the heart, a beautiful topic and also one of the vital organs of the human anatomy. And to help us discuss this is none other than our resident doctor, Dr. Amin Melrose. Doctor, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and jazakallah khairan once again.
Well, alaikum salam. Pleased to be here once more to answer some questions and to perhaps carry over a bit of knowledge to folks that are listening.
Ameen. Jazakallah khairan, Doc. Doc, the heart as an organ. Okay, let us understand from a medical perspective, what is another term for the heart, Doc?
Well, if we're talking heart, we're actually talking cardiac, and you'll find that the doctors talk cardiac. So during the course of our discussion this evening, we will be referring to cardiac, and so the listeners will know we're actually referring to the heart, because if we say pulmonary, we're talking about the lungs. We say cardiac, we're talking about the heart.
Okay, perfect. Jazakallah khairan for breaking it down for us. Doc, some weeks ago we discussed the background and the mechanism or machinery around the treatment for a heart attack. So for the next few weeks, we should be going into more detail on the work of the heart and some questions surrounding the heart, and that is the vital signs, the heart rate, blood pressure, the veins, and also the arteries and the heart, among other details around the heart, a heart transplant, and also, Doc, another thing, a pacemaker. We can also discuss the pacemaker. Doc, on a recent program, a doctor who examined a woman who had collapsed shook his head and said, there are no more vital signs. What did he mean by this, Doc?
Right now, for a quick assessment of a patient's condition, doctors routinely check what they refer to as the vital signs, and these include at least four things. I'll refer to them. The first one is the temperature of the body. That's what they're looking for. Secondly, the rate at which a patient is breathing, if the patient is breathing at all. Thirdly, the pulse rate, they look at that one, and then the blood pressure. Now, we can measure our own temperature if we want to do that with a clinical thermometer. Now, the average normal level for a human being when you measure with a clinical thermometer is around about 37 degrees centigrade. Now, individual body temperature degrees without any cause for alarm. Now, doctors routinely can temperature that is above 38 degrees centigrade as a true fever. Now, your temperature is one of the most important vital signs that a doctor would require. You can measure rate by using a watch with a second hand. Yeah. Simply count the number of times you breathe in a minute, and the normal rate ranges from 12 to 20 times in 1 minute. Now, up to 40 times a minute after exercise, of course. Now, any breathing at the rate of 40 times a minute whilst you are inactive may be seriously ill. Now, there's something to note here. Remember that observing your own breathing can cause a slight change to this rate.
Okay. Now, how can I determine my heart rate and what will it tell me?
Well, you can determine your heart rate by taking your pulse, right? Each time your heart beats, it pushes a pulse of blood through the arteries. Now, the easiest place on the body to count this pulse is in the big artery at the wrist, making your hand, the palm, face upwards. Now, with the fingers of the one hand, let's say your right hand, you feel around the bottom side of your other wrist with the palm side up and towards the thumb until you detect the rhythmic throb of this artery. Now, note something. Don't, for this procedure, you've got to use your fingers of the other hand. Now, because your thumb has a pulse of its own, for those who don't know that, simply count these throbs. Every time it throbs, you count them, you count them, you count them. Now, to get your pulse rate per minute, you count the beats for 15 seconds only, and then you multiply it by four. And on average, the human heart beats around about 72 times a minute. But there's considerable normal variation from person to person, and also in the same person during the course of the day. Children's hearts can beat up to 90 or 120 times a minute, while trained athletes may have a pulse rate as low as 40 beats per minute. Now, when I myself was in full marathon training, I had a pulse rate down to 40 beats per minute for quite a number of years. Now, your pulse rate normally goes down while you're resting, and it speeds up sometimes quite considerably when you are exercising, or if you're angry for some reason, or if you're frightened for some reason. Doctors generally consider a pulse rate of 60 to 80 beats per minute. That's a normal range for adults. Children's hearts can beat up to 90 to it beats per minute. So there we have the heart rate.
Okay, and Doc, with regards to the blood pressure, what does a blood pressure, where does the blood pressure fit in, and what is a normal healthy level when you're discussing blood pressure?
Right, that's a very nice question. Blood pressure is the force that the blood exerts as it is pumped through the blood veins and vessels and against the inside walls of the blood vessels. Now, doctors measure this pressure in the same units that are used to measure atmospheric pressure, that is, the height of a column of mercury that the pressure of blood can support. So there it is, the force of blood going and being pumped through the veins and the arteries.
Mm. Now, sometimes we hear about your BP is low, your blood pressure is low. Now, how can a doctor evaluate the type of blood pressure? So if your blood pressure is low, or is it healthy, or is it high? Now, what's a measure to have a good level of blood pressure?
Okay, you'll find this if you happen to have been in a hospital when the nurses come around with their little machine. They are going to be testing your blood pressure. Now, blood pressure fluctuates with each heartbeat. It is at its highest as the heart contracts to push out the blood. That's the pump. Reaching an average of 120 millimeters of mercury. And it falls as the heart relaxes to 80 millimeters. Now, doctors express this as 120 over 80, and they record it, in fact, as 120 over 80. And it's taken normally with a cloth around above your elbow and just below your bicep, and then they measure it like that on the machine. And this happens all the time. If you go to hospital, you know, the next thing you open your eyes, there they are with the machine. They're wanting to test to see how you're doing.
Right. Now, Doc, does the blood pressure vary when it comes to the age category of a person?
Right. Also an interesting question. Well, like the pulse beat, depending also on whether you are resting, whether you're sleeping, whether you're lying down in a hospital bed, when the nurse comes around to measure your blood pressure, it rises when you're under physical exertion and pressure is brought to bear on the heart, or even under mental stress, it could rise.
Okay. Now, Doc, is there any danger level when it comes to a blood pressure?
Well, normally speaking, a reading of greater than 120 over 80 For example, 140 over 90 repeatedly is considered abnormal, and a visit to the doctor would be advisable straight away, as there could be a problem requiring closer investigation, as it could be signaling the possibility of the patient heading towards a stroke or heart failure or a coronary heart disease or a blood vessel disorder or even hypertension. Apparently, according to research figures, now this is quite interesting. According to research figures released some years ago, about 5.5 million South Africans between the ages of 50 or attention because of our way of life today. So their pressure could go right up as a result of that.
Now, Doc, when it comes to these heartbeats, what does the heartbeat tell a person, and how does the patient hear, or what does the patient hear when they listen to the heartbeat through a stethoscope?
Yeah, actually, that's quite an interesting question, because if you want to find a doctor in a hospital, walk around and you'll see somebody with a stethoscope around his neck. That's a doctor. They carry it around like a mechanic would carry his spanners.
Right.
Okay, now normally speaking, a reading of greater than 120 over 80, for example, 140 over 90, repeatedly is considered abnormal. And a visit to the doctor would be advisable, as there would be a problem requiring close investigation, as it could be signaling the possibility or a heart failure, and coronary heart disorder, or even hypertension. Apparently, according to research figures released some years ago, about 5 years between the ages of 15 and 64 suffer from hypertension.
Now, Doc, what's the difference? You know, we did last week or the previous weeks with regards to the nervous system and the brain. Right now, we always understand and we look at the network and how the body has been created with these veins. Right now, what's the difference between the relationship between the veins and the arteries?
Well, if you put your let me see, it's about the veins. Veins and arteries are the blood vessels that together form the body's circulatory or vascular system. That's another word for circulatory system. Now, in other words, it's a plumbing system. It's our plumbing system. Mm. The system consists of hollow tubes like water pipes through which the blood flows. Right now, here's the answer. The arteries are vessels that carry the blood from the heart to all that carry the blood from the tissues back to the heart. The blood that is pumped into the arteries goes to pick up oxygen and then goes to all the tissues of the body.
Now, Doc, another thing that just came to mind. Doc, are you there with me?
Assalamu alaikum.
Jee.
Yes, I'm still there.
Okay, Doc, another thing that comes to mind, when a person goes to donate blood, right, they measure in a pint, he says 1 liter of blood. Now, how many kilometers of blood vessels does our body consist of?
Well, the last I heard it was 7.
7 kilometers.
If you're talking kilometers, that's 100,000 kilometers of blood vessels. The human body contains more than 100,000 kilometers of blood vessels. Now, these vessels are flexible and they're active, and they're dilating and constricting all the time to adjust the blood flow to the organs and to the different parts of the body.
Now, with regards to the donation of blood, Doc, how does the nurse or the person in charge differentiate or measure the type of blood, like, you know, when to stop?
Yes, well, of course, they're going to trap your arm so that where they've tied the tourniquet stand out. And then they will adjust it and they will determine whether it's O type or B type or whatever the type might be. So that is done actually by experts that determine as they receive the blood, they divide it into whatever it might be so that in future, if in fact they're drawing blood for future use, then they would put it in the correct place so that if somebody comes in and they want O type blood, they go straight there and they will then get it. So
Doc, I don't know if we have an issue with the network, but we'll see as we go along, inshallah. Now, Doc, can being overweight, I know we did obesity previously and also how it can affect the heart. What are the most common diseases that would be encouraged by being overweight?
Yeah, that's the fact of the matter is that if you are overweight, then you're going to put a lot more pressure onto your body. And in fact, it could build up so that you're going to have an artery bursting. You're going to have, your heart racing. Mm. And it's really, 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 really unhealthy. And it's so great at some stage that if you're overweight, you are possibly heading for a stroke. So because being overweight increases the load on your heart, you have a much greater risk of developing high blood pressure, especially if you are between 20 and 40 years of age. Overweight people are twice as likely to have cholesterol in their blood, and nearly three times as likely to have diabetes. If you have high blood pressure or chronic heart failure, your doctor will no doubt urge you to lose weight. I think just at this point, if it's okay, I want to just go back to that formula that we used probably about a month or 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that people can determine, in fact, whether they are overweight, whether their weight is correct, and so on. So let's just look at that formula again, and I'm hoping that our listeners have got their normal writing pad and a pen together. And the formula that one uses to work out exactly where your situation is weight-wise is weight in kilograms. 80 kilograms, you write that down, you draw a line underneath it, and you're going to divide it by height squared. That means one. Let's say you're 1.6. Your weight is 80, and your height is 1.6. So it'll be 1.6 times 1.6, which will equal out to 2.56 at the bottom under that line, and you divide that into your weight. So it's 80 over 2.56. And in this particular instance, it works out at 31.25. Now, what does that mean? Well, if your formula works out at less than 19, then you're underweight. If your formula works out at 20 to 25, you're okay, A for away. If it's 26 to 30, then you're starting to get a bit serious. You're starting to get overweight. And if it's over 31, then unfortunately you are obese and you honestly need to do something about that. So there it is. We've got the formula, and the listeners can now work it out and calculate whether, in fact, they are in a healthy realm or whether they're overweight or whether they're obese or, underweight.
Doc, with regards to heart diseases, can it be inherited from the parents? My father and grandfather both have passed on from heart attacks, and my uncle had angina. So does the heart disease run in families?
Sorry, can't hear you at the moment.
Doc, can you hear me? Doc?
Yes, okay, I can answer now. I can hear you now.
Gee.
Right, can heart inherited? That's basically the question, right? Well, like many other disorders, some heart diseases such as high blood pressure do tend to run in families. Among the heart valve defects in a person, the mitral valve prolapse particularly would seem to result from hereditary predispositions. Now, there are also several forms of that's H-Y-P-E-R, hyper, libid, L-I-B-I-D, emia, A-E-M-I-A. I'll spell it again if people are writing it down. H-Y, per, P-E-R, lib, L-I-B-I-D-A-E-M-I-A, which includes high levels of blood cholesterol that are clearly inherited in one or other form. Right. Even children, this is quite interesting, even children can have severe coronary, which is heart artery disease, and they can die from heart attacks. In addition, congenital heart disease often runs in families. So the answer, the big answer there, after all that discussion, is yes, it is definitely inherited.
Doc, 1 year of coagulants, also known as blood thinners, does this really work? Does it really thin the blood? And what are the most frequently used? What is it mostly frequently used for?
Okay, I think most people would know the coagulant as a blood thinner. Okay, but actually, that's the popular term that's used for certain anticoagulants. Drugs, but it is actually a misnomer. In other words, it is labeled incorrectly because these drugs do not, in fact, thin the blood. What they do, in fact, is they reduce the blood's ability to form blood clots. That's what they do. So I think blood thinner is a better term than coagulants. But then you've got to understand that, in fact, not thinning the blood, it's just preventing the blood from forming clots.
I see. But with thinners, the blood thinners, is Dispril part of one of the blood thinners, Doc?
Yes, we've actually got two that they normally talk about. The one is called warfarin. I'm going to spell that. War, W-A-R-F-A-R-I-N, warfarin. And the other one is heparin, H-E-P-A-R-I-N. They are the most frequently prescribed anticoagulants. They sometimes recommend it also for people who suffer from heart attacks, from deep vein thrombosis, and from pulmonary embolism. So that is, those two are normally the most popular ones that are prescribed by doctors.
Okay. Okay, our next question, Doc. Just want to get to it quickly. You mentioned pulmonary embolism. What is it, and how dangerous is it? And also, Doc, a DV, what's it, DVR, correct? Or DRV, what is
right.
it?
DRV. Okay,
DRV, DRV, cheer.
Right now, you mentioned pulmonary embolism. It's a clot that forms somewhere in the circulatory system, right? Somewhere in your veins or in your arteries. And it's called a thrombus, T-H-R-O-M-B-U-S. Now, if a thrombus, or another way of putting it, or a piece of it, or other matter breaks loose and moves through the blood system to another site, it's called an embolus. Now, an embolus that reaches the lungs, that's a condition that is called a pulmonary embolism. It can cause your death because the blood's not getting through. Now, the sequence often begins in the leg. The clot then moves up the leg, up the veins in the leg. Remember, the veins are coming back towards the heart, through the right-hand side of the heart, and becomes lodged in an artery in the lungs. There, it blocks the blood flow to a section of the lungs, and if it is massive enough, it can cause your death. So it's a clot that forms somewhere in the circulatory system. It's called a thrombus, and it's moving gradually towards the heart. It needs to be dealt with very quickly.
Doc, we used to hear that pulmonary embolism used to be a fairly frequent complication of surgical operations.
Yes, pulmonary embolism used to be a fairly frequent complication, as you say, of surgical operation. Now, today, early embolation that's opening up and various prophylactic therapies have helped to reduce the risk of embolism, although it still affects a great many people. Let's just recap. An embolus that reaches the lung is called a condition known as pulmonary embolism, and it could cause your death if it's not sorted out.
Okay. Now, Doc, my uncle had an operation for a condition known as atherosclerosis. Now, what is this and how did he get it?
Right. I'm going to correct you a little bit there. It's called atherosclerosis. I'm going to spell it for our listeners. Okay, it's not a term that we hear every day, that's for sure. Atherosclerosis. Let me spell it for them. It's A-T-H.
Mark, Doc, we lost you.
A hardening of the arteries. That's what it means.
Doc, Mark, we lost you a bit over there. Can you repeat the... No, Doc, my uncle had an operation and was known as atherosclerosis.
Sclerosis,
gee.
Yes.
And you were making us, or you were giving us the translation of it, and also you were breaking it down for us. I think we had some sort of network issue. If you could please repeat it for our listeners.
Sure. Atherosclerosis literally means a hardening of the arteries. And it refers to a group of disorders that have in common a thickening and a stiffening of the artery walls. Now, atherosclerosis causes problems when its fatty deposits reduce the flow of blood through and cutting down the supply of oxygen to tissues downstream from the obstruction. Now, if a block in a coronary, that is a heart artery, it can cause angina or a heart attack if the blockage occurs in arteries to the brain, right? Can cause the angina. The angina, of course, is a pain in the chest caused by a reduced blood flow to the heart muscle. Or you could even get a heart attack. Now, in arteries to the brain, it can cause a stroke as well. Atherosclerosis may also cause aneurysms, that is a bulging of a portion of the artery wall. It can cause ulcers, can cause gangrene even, blood clots, and the circulation problems known as intermittent claudication. Now, just at this point, something just pops into my mind now. We're talking here about fatty deposits stopping the blood from flowing. And a couple of times on this program, I've mentioned omega-3. I want to mention it again. Even if you don't have a problem like we're talking about, you will not go wrong by taking omega-3. It keeps the blood flowing, it gets rid of all the fatty deposits, and you will not have a problem. So can I just mention that?
Chiro, you can.
While we're talking about atherosclerosis. Chiro. Okay. All right.
Doc, our next question that comes in, it says, can the doctor please explain to us what exactly or what is an, is it the angiogram, Doc, or is it electrocardiogram?
Electrocardiogram, yes.
Okay.
Right, electrocardiogram, it's, right, it happens like this. As the patient lies on his or her back, in the ward or in the theater, then they place small flat electrodes. They're stuck onto his or her chest, the arms, sometimes even the legs. And as the heart beats, it generates electrical impulses that can be detected from outside the body by a technique known as electrocardiography. Electrocardiography. Maybe I should spell that as well.
Yeah.
Electro, I think it's quite simple. Cardio, that's quite simple. Graphy. So this technique is called that, as they're trying to gauge the beats of your heart. Now, an ECG, that's the abbreviated form of electrocardiograph, it's known in the abbreviated form. It's a painless procedure. The electrodes are connected to a device that records the electrical output of the patient's heart, producing a long, squiggly line. It's actually a graph on a sheet of graph paper. The ECG is the most common technique for diagnosing a heart disease because they read the shape of the graph that is drawn, and the doctors can tell if it's too high, if it's too low, if it's running level. They know exactly what the problem could be. So it's a very, very valuable way of detecting a heart problem, the ECG.
Okay, jazakallah khairan for that, doc. Can also with regards to an angiogram, can you also explain to us what is an angiogram?
Right, an angiogram is an X-ray picture of a blood vessel. To make one, the doctor must inject a substance and into the vein. Now, there are two types of angiogram. There's an arteriogram, which takes an X-ray picture of an artery, and there's a venogram or a phlebogram. Oh, these doctors have got unusual names, eh? That takes an X-ray of a vein. So an arteriogram takes an X-ray picture of an artery to see if there's any problem there. And a venogram, you can get the vein there from that one, which takes an X-ray of a vein. Both of them are known as an angiogram.
Okay. Doc, could you explain the term cardiac categorization? I believe that it is both painful and it involves a high risk to the other patients.
Yes, that is so indeed. Cardiac catheterization. Catheterization means they're going to be using a catheter. Now, anybody that's had an operation to catch the urine, they use a catheter. So I think it's quite a common term. So cardiac catheterization speaks about the heart being catheterized. It is painful, and it can be a life-threatening nature to the patient because cardiac catheterization is both painful and of great risk to the patient. It is important to understand the full facts of this procedure. All right. So catheterization has as its objective to draw fluid from a part of the body, in this case the heart, and consists of a narrow tube which is passed into the organ in order to draw out fluid for examination and a number of other test procedures. Now, it can be painful, and it's usually performed by a specialist known as a cardiologist because it is an invasive procedure.
Oh, okay. Now, jazakallah khairan for helping us and understand that.
Entering, yeah, invasive meaning it's, you know, it's going right into the body. It's interfering with your organs. There's a slight risk because it's invasive and the tube is entering the body. There's a slight risk that the catheter could puncture a blood vessel while it's on its way or produce an embolism or precipitate a heart attack. There's one chance in 1,000 of death or a major complication. So it's very, very, very small. And these surgeons that do it are really, really, they're really jacked up. They know what they're doing. In most cases, the value of the information gained as a result of the test far outweighs any risk of that particular procedure.
Talk a bypass with regards to bypass. Can you explain what is a bypass? And also, heart bypass operations were rare not so long ago, but today in this day and age, we seem to hear a lot of it. Can you please explain who needs a bypass?
Right. in coronary heart artery bypass, surgery, in fact, we're talking about, which is, in fact, the most common heart operation performed in South Africa, believe it or not. The surgeon removes a vein, usually from the patient's lower leg, and connects it one end to the aorta, one end to where he cut off the actual vein that is not functioning properly. And the other end, of course, to the coronary artery. So from the artery to the aorta is where this vein, which is removed from the leg or even from the chest, is going to be inserted to take over the function that the artery is not performing. The blocked section of the artery is therefore bypassed and blood is allowed to flow freely again. The newly connected vein in this way is enabled to bypass the blocked artery, allowing blood to flow freely again. It's also not uncommon to use an artery from the chest, as I mentioned just now, to perform the bypass.
Doc, I think this is going to be our final question because we almost run out of time here. I've heard of angina, but I've never really understood what the problem or how does one get the angina. Can you please explain what is this?
Yes, certainly. Angina is detected when a patient complains of a discomfort. Listeners, concentrate on this one. A patient complains of a discomfort in the chest. And this is brought on by physical or emotional stress. The problem that unfolds is that the cardiac muscle is not receiving as much oxygen as it requires because of atherosclerosis or fatty deposits, which have so narrowed the coronary arteries that the heart's demand for blood exceeds the supply that's available to it. Angina, therefore, is a distinguishing feature of coronary artery disease.
We've got so much more to discuss, Doc. But inshallah, we will continue. There'll be a part two, definitely. We did speak on last question was question 21. So next week, inshallah, we will continue. We say jazakallah khairan to you, Doc, for giving out your valuable time, as always.
You're very, very welcome. And all we've got to say then is assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Until next time.
Inshallah, jazakallah khairan. And that was Dr. Melrose giving us and speaking about the heart, and also known as the cardiac vascular. And also we were going to discuss the vascular vein and the different arteries, you know, but there's much, much more that we will be discussing in the future. From the team of the Medical Matters with myself, Brother Suleiman Isop, every Wednesday evenings between 8 and 9 p.m. via Manila, assalamu alaikum. ورحمة الله وبركاته